On this episode of Back of the Grid, we are going to be talking about the new engine regulations for 2026, and we're going to be previewing all of the storylines leading us into the Japanese Grand Prix. Let's go. Hello and welcome to another edition of Back of the Grid. I'm your host, Stu, and I'm joined only by Tom this week.
Hello, only me.
Hello. How are you doing? How was your Easter, Tom? Did you have a nice time? Did you eat some lamb?
Yeah. I didn't, no, actually. Just went on a big walk. That's the kind of thing I do.
I ate lamb, and it was some of the best lamb I've ever eaten in my entire life.
I mean, before derailing the podcast too far, I'm just going to ask, is that an Easter thing that I've never known about in my entire life?
Lamb's a thing in Easter, for sure. Yeah. Anyway, we're not here to talk about my Easter munchies. We're talking about the Formula One Japanese Grand Prix. And even sort of further ahead from that, further in the distance, we're talking about the sort of the news that fresh details have emerged on the rough specs of the 2026 power unit and sort of wider regulations. So I'll take us through sort of my little bullet point list here, and then we've got a question about it as well, and we'll go through, we'll sort of try and deconstruct it as we go. So sticking with the 1.6 internal combustion engine, but they're moving down from about 550 kilowatts or 750 brake horsepower if you're in old school engineering world, to about 400 kilowatts or about 535 brake horsepower. The battery element is going up from what's currently about 150 kilowatts up to about 350 kilowatts of battery. So altogether, it should work out about 1,000 brake horsepower by the time you've added those two together. Obviously, it depends on how well teams do at designing and building their engines reliably. But the maximum power should be around about 1,000, maybe 1,010 horsepower. They want to include some sort of push to pass override function in inverted commas, similar to the old KERS controlled by the driver rather than the sort of more automated systems that the cars have evolved into over the course of this generation of engine. Although drivers do currently have the option of adjusting the deployment during a race. We just don't see it happen. So I'm not sure, we'll get into it, but I'm not sure this is sort of such a huge difference engine-wise. The desire is to make the cars 40 to 50 kilos lighter. They want to make them 200 millimeters shorter in length, 100 millimeters narrower in width, and they want movable aero for additional drag reduction on the straights. Mm. So I read this, and these are all things that we already have. We already have movable aero with DRS, and we already have adjustable engine settings to change the power output of the engines over the course of race and the deployment over a race. So the main difference, I think, is obviously the tipping of the balance between the two forms of power output. You've got the more powerful battery and the less powerful engine, because obviously the technology has moved on in leaps and bounds in the 8 years now? 10 years, is it?
20 years? I'm trying to remember.
2014, weren't they?
2014 or 15. I always consider 2016 the start of the hybrid era.
I think it'll be by the time they get
we're
into
already
these,
like 2 years in at that point, but that was like when we saw
that was in the new shape. The new shaped bodies came in 2016, but 2014 was when the engine came in. So by the time these engines are with us, it'll be 12 years.
12 years,
and obviously 12 years is a long, 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 long time for an engine formula to be around, and a lot has changed in that time. As you know, you yourself drive an electric car now,
yeah. Thanks for shaming me on the podcast.
It's not a shame. No, it's a sick car. I like it.
Thanks.
Yeah, so we've got a question about it. I'll read the question and then we'll sort of get into it, because I think this question is quite a good one to help us kick us off. So Killerwog asks, with rumours of active aero in the new regs spelling the end of DRS, how do you think the FIA will approach in implementation, would you make it a separate standard power system for the push to pass, or would you challenge everyone to develop their own within a target of allowable energy supplied? I'd be real curious how devastating that would be if a team just gets the proverbial push to pass more right than anyone else. Red Bull already sort of showed us that with their first Rocket DRS newly made for Max. So, well, for Red Bull. So, yeah, I think that's the curiosity about sort of the changes of the regulations. Like, will the movable aero and the push to pass deployment sort of all work together as one, like, super push to pass button that you're like limited on the number of times you use it over the course of a race? Or will it just be a DRS zone, like we've got now, a DRS zone where everything sort of streamlines itself a little bit and you get a bit more power? And then you get the same, you effectively, if that is the case, sorry, I'm talking a lot, but like, if that is the case, again, how is that different from what we've got now?
Yeah. I was always somewhat of a fan of the old curse system. Like, you say before, it still exists in some form, to some degree. But I did used to like the, you have an allocation of power, essentially, that is deployable wherever you want through the lap for as long or as short as you want. And you can use that how you see fit. And there was an element of strategy to it. And it still exists a little bit. But what I sort of seem to find that it feels like most people use that at the moment as, you have a lap of like recovery, building the energy, and then you just have a lap on maximum attack, where you just essentially turn the thing on and use it at full power. And then you have to have a lap on like reserve, where you've then, you're rebuilding that. It's why, for example, we have like the very slow out laps in qualifying, followed by a blistering quali lap, and then you basically don't get anyone that does two quali laps back to, you know, two hot laps back to back anymore.
Yeah.
Because you can't get the most out of the unit. Whereas if it was a set amount that would naturally recover over the course of a lap regardless, and you could just use it a little bit like the old KERS system when it first got introduced in like, well, what was that, 2012 or something?
Yeah, no. KERS, old KERS was like, I think
2014 when the first... Oh, is it that old? No, it's not that old.
No, maybe 2010 then. It's old though. It's a long time ago.
Yeah, I remember it being on like the older generation of cars before we went fully hybrid.
Braun didn't have it. That was 2009. So the Brauns didn't have it. I think it was the year after that the big teams had it. 2010, they brought it in to have the energy recovery. And it was an option. Like, they didn't have to have it, but it was an option for that if they could make it work and they make the cars faster, then obviously they'll go for it. And then eventually, I think there were certain teams that never ever had it. I think Williams never actually had like they developed their own. They developed their own like flywheel system that was like sat really high in the car. And because it was so heavy, because you've got a big heavy flywheel sitting above the driver's head, it just ruined the balance of the car. So they could never get the most speed. It could have been like a really effective system, but they just couldn't get it to work in a race car. But that system did actually go on into the real world. And I think it found its way into like London buses, I want to say, or like some form of energy recovery for like on a more industrial scale, let's say.
So I think that older system, although it wasn't perfect, I think the way of using it was maybe better than what we've got at the moment. And it was about, like, in my eyes, it's if you want, like, a boost out of a corner in a traction zone or something, you could use it there. If it's more boosting along at top speed on a straight, you could use it there. If it's literally in wheel-to-wheel combat, you can use it strategically there to either defend or attack.
But they are still doing that.
Oh, no, they are, but I don't think it's to the same availability, let's say. You know, because
you don't see it. The difference is there's no graphic now. We don't have a graphic to show people that it's being used and what people's energy levels are over the lap. And I think that's a shortcoming of Formula One's broadcast system. I don't know how, like, we've sort of gone backwards, because back in the KERS days, you had a little graphic with a battery on it and a little power symbol inside of it that would tell you how much power a driver had used over a lap.
Yeah.
And at some point that disappeared. And we've never had anything come back like it to tell you what the state of charge is in any of the cars. So we don't know when someone is like sending it down the straight and sort of, like, you know, say Alonso is defending really hard in Hungary and using his energy in all the right places. We don't get to see that because we don't have that graphic to tell us where that energy is being used. So I think a key part of all of this depends on Formula One coming up, restoring that ability to show the audience where the power is being used. 100%. And again, there's no reason why that can't come in. You don't need the new engine regulations to do that. We've got all the telemetry. I mean, you can go on the telemetry online and see everything that's happening with the cars.
Yeah.
There's no reason why they can't show us live during a broadcast. They've done it before. What power's being used and where? So,
I think touching on like Kilowog's question that's related to this, I think at least initially they would probably have to standardize whatever this thing is, because I think when you're already developing a new ICE unit and battery unit in the first place, this would maybe need to be something additional to that
would
at least standardize to begin with. And then maybe once you'd had a year or two of the engine formula itself and things were stabilized and everyone was in a decent place with that, you would maybe then open that up to expand on it. Because am I misremembering that parts of the MGUK and stuff like that were at one point standardized?
It's all done. So there's an ECU, a common ECU in every F1 car. They're developed by McLaren, I think, that they use. Every team has the same ECU, and it's so that the FIA can monitor properly what's going on. What you're describing is it kind of already exists. So what they'll do is they'll just, because I expect everything will just still go through this ECU and they'll just program the sort of rule set into this ECU. So everyone's working to the same sort of spec. So it could be that there is talk of it only being available at certain speeds and stuff like that, and at certain and up to certain speeds, like top speed limiting it and things like that. But I think that seems a bit pointless to me.
At that point, you might as well just like automate the system. It kind of takes away the point, doesn't it?
Yeah, because everyone's just going to reach. Obviously, different cars will reach depending on how they're geared and depending on how much drag they're carrying. They'll reach that speed at different rates, but still, at the same time, I think that's a bridge too far in like restricting them. I think why should a Formula One car be top speed limited, but electronically, that seems like a strange thing to do to a race car, you know?
Yeah.
So how would I like to see it implemented? I think the best way to implement something like this is probably to give them a certain amount of time that they can use across the period of the race. And the simplest way for the audience to gather how they're doing it is to do it that way and to still show them. And it also, I think that would have the least detrimental effect on the racing, because the people chasing behind the leader have the option of using it as much as possible to keep up with the leader. And the hope would be that the leader has to use theirs as well to stay ahead. Otherwise, they'll just pull away. But obviously in Formula One, things are aero dependent. And if you are in the lead, you've inherently got an advantage anyway. And what you don't want is for something like this to extend that advantage. You know, you don't want people behind fighting each other, losing loads of time in DRS, override function. You don't want it that to slow the cars behind down and still have the car ahead just streaking off. Mm-hmm. I think that I do think the team should be free to develop their own sort of. I think there is freedom in the regs already for teams to develop their own unique takes on this, because everyone's movable aero will be slightly different, and yeah, everyone's power delivery will be, you know, slightly different as well, because everyone's using different motors, different internal combustion engines. So this, even with a boost, there's still going to be a differentiator between how quick they can get up to, how effectively they can use that boost.
Yeah.
But my concern is that it's actually not a huge amount different to what we've got now. And my biggest concern is being able to see it. Because if there's movable aero that you can't see, like we had front wings that you could adjust on the fly, but no one knew when someone was adjusting their front wing, because there was no angle that where you could possibly see it.
Yeah.
And I think that's like the real kicker, and allowing them to use it at any point on the lap rather than restricting them to just particular zones as well, I think it'd be very helpful. I think it'd make it much more interesting.
Yeah, I think you've got to find a balance, haven't you, between it being overcomplicated for someone that is newer to the sport, for example, or completely new to the sport, for it to be able to be understandable. Yeah. But you've also got to like have the information there as well. So I think you would possibly have to link your other aero elements to DRS, otherwise you avoid or free up DRS to be used more, like whichever way you
one or the other. Yeah.
But if you start having, well, there's the DRS bit that you're allowed to use in certain parts of the lap when you're within a second of another car, but here's another thing that you can use that kind of does the same thing, but you can use it anywhere you want and doesn't matter.
It's just like, overcomplicating
it's going to get overcomplicated. So realistically, they have to link those two systems, and whether that means freeing up DRS to use everywhere or whether it means attaching the other movable aero elements to the DRS system and continue to use it the same way.
Yeah, and the power boost as well.
And then obviously you've got the power boost anyway, so you're already like, well, like we've said, it exists to some extent, depending on how much they then change it for these new regs, but it does exist to some extent. But again, you need that visualization back, because at the end of the day, we have the visualizations for DRS, and they don't necessarily need to be
there, isn't it, on screen?
They don't need to be on the timing tower all the time. Like, it's not like it's got to constantly be there. But if you're watching a battle head to head and you've got the onboards, when you've got the onboards, you've got all the throttle inputs, all the brake inputs, speed, G meters. Like, there's a lot of information that gets shown to you there. There's nothing stopping, which we already have the DRS kind of thing that goes green when it's open. So there's nothing to say that we can't have some sort of battery deployment icon there so that it's very clear what is going on. Like, it's literally one icon added to something that's already got plenty of information on it that I don't think would be overwhelming in any capacity.
Well,
and then the other option is like when you've got your... when you've got kind of your wide shots of a battle and you sort of, you traditionally have your both driver names either side, don't you, of like who's going head to head, being able to show it on those as well. And doesn't need to be up and down the timing tower so that constantly when you're on like more general racing, you can see who's exactly doing what, because it's not particularly of interest at that point. But in those onboards or wide battle shots, the interface that goes with them needs something on it. In the same way it's got something on it to show DRS, it needs something on it to show that the power system, the battery boost.
And again, that's dependent on how they implement this. Like, you know, is it a counter to say how many uses of it they've got left? Is it a timer to say how much time on boost they've got left? Is it a is it just a series of shapes to show what's being used at a certain point? I think there's loads of things that they could already be showing in the graphics that they just don't show, which is a real shame, because, you know, how many times have you been watching a race and you wanted to know how many laps someone's done on a set of tires?
Yeah.
Like, all the time I want to see that information. I want that information like there every lap, and there's just no way you can get that information other than
that
the
as well,
second screen.
That as well is such a simple thing to do, because we've got the tire icons.
Well, they've got it.
All it needs is such a small little number putting inside that tire icon.
You've got the red circle.
You've got the yellow circle and you've got the white circle, stick a little number in it to say how old that set of tyres is. Yeah. And I mean, it's not like we don't know. That information is there because you can go on the app and you can get it. And they know enough that someone is putting a used set on, because I can't remember the difference in the apps now. It's now we're talking about it, but the icons, sorry. There's a difference in the icons between if it's a used set or a new set, which obviously you see a lot in that quality. Yes,
there is. Yeah, it's whether or not there's a bracket around it, I think.
That's it, yeah. So you've already got things like that. So it's, they know which set of tyres is going on.
It's all there. All the information's there. They just have to. They have to be more
things.
They have to be smarter with the development of the timing tower graphic, I think, because that's all information that should be on hand. And I absolutely think of it. You know, I used to work there, man. Like, I know it's possible. I know that I could come up with a design that would show all of those things myself.
I mean, even on the, we do get this occasionally, I think. I feel like I've seen this and I'm not just fever dreaming it. But obviously we have all the different variations of the timing tower. So you have your interval timing tower, which is obviously everyone's distance from the leader. The number in time is increasing every single time. And then you have your gap timings, which is the distance to the next car in front of them, where obviously those numbers go like and vary for those who might have not noticed that or don't know what I'm referring to. All it needs is like a third iteration of that, of like laps since stop or something. I don't know, like current stint length.
Doesn't even need to be that.
Just,
you know,
just
what it
tells
is?
You the number of laps that they've been on this stint would be so helpful because you can see who's like out of, at a very quick glance, you can see, that person's like going to be, you know what I mean? You can start to visualize the strategy for yourself, even as a quite, let's say, entry level fan, someone that's not watched the sport for a very long time can start to understand, Ricardo's in eighth, but he's the only one there that's not pitted yet. And like, but that information is, you don't need a commentator to tell you that. And to be fair, I'm not saying everyone's like this, but over the years from me being a little kid of watching this sport, it's working things out like that and understanding things like that that's always been my enjoyment in the sport, of to be able to watch something and go, that's happening here. And you can only do that if the information's at your disposal. And in this modern era, I have to sit with an app separate to be able to see these kinds of bits of information.
Yeah. And you have to be watching live as well. That's the other thing. Like, you have to be watching live to be able to get that.
And it's such a shame, because little changes like that and little bits of extra information being out there would potentially like create a whole new generation of just stat and strategy nerds like us.
Well, we don't need any more stat and strategy nerds in the world of Formula, especially when we're as bad at it as we are. But I think for a long, 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 long time, as long as I've ever watched Formula One, it has always been an issue that you don't necessarily, especially in a multi-pit stop race with complex strategy, the issue has always been, I don't know who is running where in this timing tower, in the ultimate equation of the race, because I don't know who's pitted or hasn't pitted from looking at this tower. I have to watch it and watch it and watch it. And eventually, if I'm lucky, a commentator will mention it. Or if I watch for long enough, I'll see that pit stop happen, or I'll see it unfold, and that'll be that. And there's an argument to say that that's the strategy of F1. They want you to stick with it and watch it and find out. But I don't think it's a huge ask to allow people to work out where people are placed based on how many pit stops they've done. I think that's totally fair enough, I think. And it's not a difficult thing to implement. It needs a P and a number. That's all it needs next to their name.
That's it. And then that like small number for tire life inside that icon.
Maybe if you want to go further, but as a minimum, you want to know how many times people pit. We've gone off a massive, massive tangent here. But it's one of my favorite things. The design and the graphics around especially around the TV graphics, is kind of my thing. So, you know, I don't mind going on a tangent and talking about this sort of stuff.
Yeah. Quick note just before we move on completely from it. Thoughts on, I mean, I can't imagine you having any bad ones, but thoughts on the cars being a bit shorter, a bit narrower and a bit lighter?
I think I don't mind it, but I think if they're going to get shorter and narrower, then that weight is probably going to move up in the car. So because they've got to find a place to put that way. They're giving themselves less swimming pool, a shallower swimming pool, if you like, or a less voluminous swimming pool.
Yeah.
And so if you squeeze a swimming pool in, everything in the tide of the water in the swimming pool will go up, won't it? So all that weight has got to move upwards, even if they're taking weight out of it. I think they're going to struggle to get the weight down that low with the size of the batteries they're probably going for. But then it's down to the teams to develop lightweight materials and lightweight batteries to accommodate it. But I do think it's going to be a big challenge for them to fit all this in that form factor at that weight.
Not going to be a huge impact, but obviously you've got the change of the MGUH is going and all the battery power will be driven from an MGUK. So
that's true. Yeah, turbochargers on these cars are not particularly the motor that is connected to the turbochargers probably weighs a few kilos, probably not 50 kilos, but yeah, I think there's. I guess taking some of the weight, the length and width out of it is going to, it'll all add up. So you will be able to, it won't be quite maybe the challenge that I think it will, but the batteries will be heavier. The batteries will be more dense. True. And if they do have to, if they get taller inside the car, then that means the center of gravity is going to go up. That means they're all going to be pigs to drive. They're already too heavy. And if you make them lighter, but move the center of gravity up, then the drivability of the car is still going to be more or less the same as where it is because they're still going to be too heavy.
Yeah.
That's my answer for that one. I'm optimistic about it. It's the right direction. I think they're moving in the right direction, making them smaller and trying to make them lighter. I don't think many teams in the first generation of these regulations, the first season, 2026, will have cars at the minimum weight.
No.
I think there's going to be a grid of 20 over. We'll that's a whole other debate. 20.
In theory, it'll be 20.
Yeah, in theory, 20 massively overweight car, 50 kilo overweight cars. I think it's going to be
probably. Yeah.
Anyway, shall we move on to some storylines and talk about the Japanese Grand Prix finally?
Yes, let's get to that.
Okay. So my first storyline for us this week is actually from the back of the grid. Of course, it's about Alpine. They're switching to the blue livery and they're introducing their first weight reduction upgrade. My question is, will it make a difference? And does that weight reduction upgrade involve just removing all the paint altogether?
Hopefully not, for one.
I mean, I don't mind a carbon-only car, you know. Like, I think they look kind of cool, but that one, you know, that one never looked right.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I think it will at least get them in the mix with the other cars in that, like, it's not just going to suddenly propel them into the points. Like, we know that. F1's about so much more than that. But it's at least going to put them in contention with those teams around them, like the Williams, the I can't think of what to call it this year.
Sabres.
The Sauber's, but I was thinking more the team that formerly known as Minardi.
Oh, the RBs.
I was going to use its real name because Chris is the V-Cabs. And then I completely forgot what the real name was because Chris never uses it. So, but like...
That's the issue with only ever calling them not the real name. You have to remember the not real name as well as the real name.
It's because Chris is the only one that ever has to say it, so I always kind of forget.
Well, it's the only one who ever bothers mentioning them, that's why, until today.
But I think, like, it will certainly mix that lot up a bit and it'll get them in amongst them, but it's definitely not going to be any kind of silver bullet that suddenly gets some scoring points because there's far much more fundamentally not right with the car, I would say. But, I mean, I'm more than happy to be proven wrong on that. I just think that that's the realistic scenario where they might be knocking on the door of a top 10 finish if there's some DNFs higher up or something like that. But at the minute, Haas is the team that's cleaning up those scenarios. And I don't think that a weight reduction is enough for them to properly compete with Haas. More, it will get them in the mix with Sauber and Williams and stuff, the teams that are finishing like 13th and below, essentially.
Yeah. But, you know, at least it means that they'll be able to compete with someone and not be absolutely terrible. Although saying that last race, you know, they didn't do terribly last race, but I think that was quite circuit dependent. You know, was it Ocon who got into Q2 last race?
Yeah, it wasn't awful. I think there was, race pace wise, there's at least some things that play into their hands circumstantially. Like, you've obviously got the woe that is Sauber's pit stop infrastructure at the minute and stuff like that. Like, and obviously people going out the race and so on. So yeah, I'm hopeful that it at least gets them in the mix with those other bottom five teams, let's call them. But
yeah,
I'm not putting my
you won't bet your house on it, would you? You've led me beautifully into my next storyline, which is can Sauber do a pit stop?
I hope so. It's painful. I mean, yes, I know we have every year there's at least like one or two of these kind of incidents. But to have
three races in a row,
back to back races, where they've had, and it's always the front left, I think, as well, isn't it? It's been the front left every single time from what I can remember.
It's just crazy.
So
even when they slow down, obviously there's some heat soak situation going on with that, and it's causing problems for the front wheel, not in the front wheel, but it's not what you expect to see at the pinnacle of motorsport, is it?
No.
When in the world of, you know, sub 2 second pit stops, and these guys are taking 60 seconds to do some of their pit stops, like, no, it's not good enough. More interesting storylines now. The next one, can Verstappen keep up his run of pole positions, keep a clean sheet for the season so far? He's been pole at every race. Is there anything, any sign for you that he might not be on pole this week?
I think he's going to depend on which Ferrari turns up. Although the McLaren,
as in which Ferrari, which Ferrari team, or which iteration of Ferrari, which version of the Ferrari Formula One team?
Yeah, I think, I mean, Ferrari are their own worst enemies is kind of what I was getting at. But this is the thing, in quali is remarkably close at the minute this season.
Yeah.
And I think McLaren are starting to find the right set up and get in touching distance. I mean, we saw that what Lando was third on the grid last time out, so they're in that mix now. And yeah, I think Sainz with the bit between his teeth at the minute, obviously Norris with the McLaren looking to come good, Leclerc maybe overrated in your eyes, but he's still more than capable of putting on.
I'll admit he's a good qualifier, but I just think he's not the complete package though.
I think there's three good opportunities there for someone else to be on pole. I don't think anyone's quite got near the Red Bull on race pace yet in terms of, like, well, the Ferraris were close in Australia, but that fight was ruined pretty quickly.
That was without Verstappen, there is an extra couple attempts in Verstappen, isn't there, on top? So
yeah, so I would be very interested to see a race without issue for him, so we can see how close Sainz and the Ferrari actually is. Because at the minute, I think he's the guy that will challenge him the most, Sainz.
You know, this circuit, in terms of its qualities, isn't a million miles away from what Albert Park is like. There's a bit more of a mix of corners. There's a few more medium speed, but
there's a few less
slow speed. But there's a lot of really quick stuff. And
I
think obviously the Red Bull excels there, but I do think the Ferrari's looking really good through the quick stuff as well. So
yeah,
it could be. I think this could be quite close between the Ferrari, which leads me to my next storyline. Will Leclerc spoil the party for Red Bull and Verstappen and pinch the pole position he's been threatening to nick all season?
I genuinely think at the minute it might be Sainz.
Yeah, I think it could be Sainz as well.
Out of the two of them, I think Leclerc's got it in him, but just this whole Hamilton to Ferrari thing has lit in a fire in Sainz that, I mean, it's not like he wasn't a good driver before. He's been more than capable of putting it on pole and winning races before. It's not just this that's stoked a fire in him, but I think he's just added that extra edge to what he's able to get out of the car this season, because there is that element of just, for want of a better phrase, driving to survive. Yeah. In the sport.
Yeah. I mean, you've kind of like, you've preempted my next storyline there, because my next storyline was, will it be Science who steals the show and makes it two wins from two races? Can he do it?
I mean,
even if he isn't on pole, can he do it?
I've genuinely only coincidentally led into every single one of your next things. It's been a genuine coincidence. This time I've pre-read it, so I'm going to do it on purpose and basically say, if it's not Science, I think it's Norris, because the McLarens are looking good.
Yes, so we've touched on the McLarens already, but I will say, I will read the storyline. And can McLaren keep up the good form? Interesting with McLaren. I'm not sure they'll be quite there with Ferrari at this one, but I could be completely wrong.
Yeah,
it'll be interesting to see how they do. And my final one is, how badly will Mercedes suffer in some of the highest speed corners of the season? You know, 130R, the Degners, really quick corners. Concerned. I'm very concerned about Mercedes.
I think that if McLaren do well here again, like they did in Australia, and Mercedes don't, it will highlight like a fundamental difference in philosophy that will play out over the course of the season. And I think we may fall into a situation where slower stuff McLaren are going to suffer and faster stuff Mercedes are going to suffer. And that gap will kind of close as the season goes on and updates come, and they'll probably end up meeting somewhere in the middle. But yeah, I think what we will probably find is, like, as you go to a trickier street track, or, you know, something much slower,
less aero dependent,
the Mercedes is maybe going to look like it comes alive, and the McLaren might struggle. And I think
Monaco,
that's where we're going to start seeing, like, just the almost Jekyll and Hyde between those two cars of one being good in one space and another being good in another. Well, and it's what, unfortunately, that's what lets, like, Red Bull or Ferrari start to kind of eke out a gap and run away, because they seem good no matter where we're putting them at the moment, both those cars. But, I mean, at least there's some interest in seeing McLaren and Mercedes scrap over what is third place.
Yeah, and with the same engine as well, let's not forget.
Yeah.
I think with Mercedes, I'm very concerned about Mercedes, because they, you know, they haven't suddenly become a terrible team. But I think maybe the tools that they're using, there's clearly a fault in the tools somewhere, because you don't just become slow overnight. And I wonder if there's like an issue with their wind tunnel or something that they're not seeing. Or I read a story in Adrian Newey's biography about when it might have been when he was at Williams, or it might have even been at Leighton House, but the wind tunnel they were using, as the air was going, and this was ground effect cars back then as well, as the air would go underneath, it was actually pushing the floor down and bowing it underneath the car. So they were scratching their heads for ages, wondering, why is this car not doing in the real world what it's doing in the wind tunnel? We've got all this downforce. And it turned out that there was an issue with the supposedly solid surfaces of the wind tunnel were not as solid as what they thought, and they weren't able to replicate real life the way that the team was expecting them to. So they had to redesign the wind tunnel, to make a whole new wind tunnel. And if that's an issue Mercedes have got, something like that, where the solid surfaces aren't staying solid, then that is a real fundamental issue with their entire design process. And it could be that, you know, the older wind tunnels, the old design cars from, you know, 2016 through to 2021, that wind tunnel suited them perfectly, because those the potentially flexible surfaces near to the car weren't flexing, because they weren't having pressure put on them. And now we're into real ground effect and high levels of suction. That's a totally different sort of flow of air over the car, and you do wonder if their tunnel isn't optimized for that. Maybe I'm not saying that, you know, surfaces are bending and it's broken, but I'm saying there are nuances between the types of aero that you're using and the type of wind tunnel that you're using. Like, you need them to correlate. So
yeah, makes sense. It's interesting. And I mean, a team like Newey's Red Bull car doing well is indication that obviously he will ensure that those kind of things don't creep in at Red Bull, making sure whatever they're designing does correlate properly between track and wind tunnel.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, they're not daft. Like, I'm sure there are elements of, you know, they would have thought of this stuff. Like, I'm not some messiah coming up. I'm not the first person to think this. They're a smart bunch of people. They will have been testing like element. They will have tested absolutely every calibration point possible on all of their tools to make sure they're all, you know, working as they expect them to. But it's just when you hear Toto Wolff in the press saying, we have a fundamental problem with our issue, we have correlation issues, we have we're not seeing in the real world that what we expect to see from the wind tunnel, then those are the questions that you immediately ask yourself. You know, is the wind tunnel working as it should? So yeah. I mean, that's my take. That's my hot take on that. Yeah. Should I do some predictions?
I was about to say, with all that wrapped up and us deciding how things are going to play out, let's make some predictions. So with Chris not being here, he's decided to submit his just almost on a whim on a message. He said, let me know who the random driver is, guys, and I'll send you some preds. So
he did.
For preds, I'm going to give his first, and then we will make ours. For those of you who have not been here before, if you head to the website backofthegrid.com, there's all the information on how to play and join in on here, and it is always worth doing, because if you manage to get all five of these predictions right that we're about to go through for the Japanese Grand Prix, you will be the recipient of a lovely prize. So always worth entering every week, well, every race. So right, fastest in Q3, we've talked about it a little bit already. On an interesting note where we were saying, could Ferrari and McLaren maybe upset Red Bull? Chris has gone with a Norris pole. Well, fastest in Q3, because we judge the fastest time, not necessarily if they are penalised.
Okay. Do you want me to go first?
Go for it. I feel like you have an idea.
I think I'm going to go Sainz. I think he's riding the wave of that race win. I think it's going to boost his confidence a lot, and he is on another level at the minute. So Sainz for me.
I was going to say the same. It's boring, but I'm on train Sainz at the minute this season. I mean, I have been for the last couple of seasons, but I really am this season. I think this is a good one to be on, team Sainz. So for the winner, Chris is going back to standard operation and going with Verstappen. I think I'm probably going to agree with Chris on this one, to be fair, because as close as the Ferrari and the McLaren looked that they could get in Australia, I think that Verstappen element that you kind of touched on when we're doing storylines of, like, you know, just having him in the car is worth probably a couple of tenths a lap over what that car is capable of. So I am unfortunately going to be a little boring and say Verstappen. How about you, Stu?
I'm going to do the same. I think it's disappointing enough when he does win. I don't want to be giving up points at the same time and feeling even worse about it. So yeah, Verstappen.
That's fair. Next first prediction DNF. Is first DNF. Chris has gone with Lance Stroll on this one. So it feels like an old faithful from seasons gone by, but maybe not necessarily the best choice at the minute. I don't know.
I am going to go with... I might be really cruel and go Tsunoda.
Oh, you're using my old tactic, home race. That home means... race cruelty. Okay, so I'm going to go something slightly different, similar but different. I'm going to go with the other one because it's Honda powered, which is technically a home race. So Ricardo. I'm going to go Ricardo, and I'll go for the other one.
I almost went Ricardo. I think it's the more likely as well. But he's not very crashy though, Ricardo. If he's goes, he's more likely to have crashy, a bad pit stop or be slow for some other reason.
But yeah, I'm going to go with it for Honda home vibes.
Nice.
We're all for that.
Wow.
Number of finishes. Chris is sensing drama. He is going 15 finishes.
Way too few. I mean, it'd be amazing. It's going to be a mad race if there's only 15.
I mean,
which I wouldn't mind.
I don't know if I should say this before you make your prediction, but it's looking like there is a good chance of rain.
Oh, is there weather? Is there actually?
Yeah.
Wow, so, they've moved it, try and avoid the weather, and they've just got more weather.
Yeah, so the lead up is looking less likely for rain. As it stands currently on, what is it, Tuesday the 2nd of April evening right now, it's suggesting that there's more chance of rain for the Sunday. I mean, that's a 5-day out.
Yeah, we're a long way out.
We're still a long way from that, but it would appear that weather over that part of the world is still the same as what we're used to in Japan, despite moving the entire...
this time of year.
The entire other end of the calendar.
Just all year is monsoon season.
Yeah.
Number of finishes. I'm going to go 17.
Okay. I'm going to be a little bit pessimistic like Chris, but not quite as so. I'm just sitting in the middle on 16. And then, as I said before, we have picked the random driver this week, so Chris could send his prediction. The name of said driver is Alexander Albon, and Chris has gone with him in 13th place. I think that feels about right for where Albon is at the minute. I'm surprised Chris, with this sheer number of non-finishes he's gone for, hasn't got him higher. So I'm also going to say 13, but on the basis that I've got more finishes. So I think that there's like a couple of cars that he's likely to finish ahead of, like the Alpines, for example, and maybe like a Sauber. But then everyone else is just going to be purely based on DNFs. Okay. Probably finish ahead of his teammate, but yeah.
I'm going to go 10th. I think he's going to scrape a point.
Scrape a little point for Alexander Albon.
Yeah,
brilliant. Right. Well, that is our predictions in. Like I say, if you want to compete in this and join the predictions league, head to backofthegrid.com. There's also some links there to both the fantasy leagues that we run. So we run and one on the official F1 fantasy game, and we also run one on Grid Rival. There's links to both there, so be sure to check those out as well. Should we move on to inbox from that?
Let's.
Keep me saying now.
Stay out.
Box. Hey, man.
I do enjoy the drama when you push that button of, will it make any noise? Will it play the thing or not?
I think there must be like 1 second of dead audio on the start of the clip that we maybe need to trim out.
Yeah, maybe.
Every time I press it, it's like, will it?
I'll have to take a look at that. Okay, I'll take the first one. It's from Wes. He says, hey man, I know Red Bull just had a catastrophic brake failure. And it was catastrophic, wasn't it? Could have been more catastrophic, but it was pretty lively. Catastrophic brake failure, but I still think they have an advantage in terms of power unit reliability. With talk of Max possibly being able to not push his power unit as hard as he pulls away from massive leads, just how big of an impact does this have on Red Bull's run to another World Drivers' Championship and Constructors' Championship? It all depends on how much he does have to push, I guess. Like, if the teams can get close to him and make a difference to him, then... You know, we've never really seen this engine be stretched across a season as hard as maybe it might have been because they've got such an advantage. So it could be that they start discovering sort of car issues. Now they are, you know, if they are having to push that car that little bit beyond its envelope, then yeah, we could start seeing reliability issues. If now, you know, you've got teams like Ferrari getting a bit closer and keeping them a bit more honest, then obviously that opens the door for reliability issues as you push your car harder.
Yeah, I can't really add much more to that. I don't think they've been properly pushed yet. So I don't think that there's anything dramatic in this or anything like that. I think there will be an element of them having to choose between reliability reservation and pushing, like trying to save the, essentially not running away with a race in order to save the components for when they are being challenged. I think there'll be an element of that, but I don't think it's like a huge threat to them or anything.
The one thing I'll add is when your power unit is, I believe that power unit is the fastest and the most reliable on the entire grid. And when you have that, then it's obviously everything is less of an issue.
Yeah, I mean, that makes your life a lot easier. That era of Mercedes when they were in the exact same position.
Yeah.
Mercedes spent so long being not only the best power unit in terms of performance, but also being single-handedly the most reliable on the grid. And it won them and their customer teams a lot of valuable points that, like, look how good Williams was in the early era where the Mercedes was just bulletproof. And Williams were basically there to clean up third, and then if anything did go wrong for a Mercedes race, they were both on the podium. Like, that's just how much of an impact that Mercedes power unit had, and Red Bull are kind of enjoying a similar era, maybe not the same level of dominance from the power unit itself, but they're definitely in a position of being combined best performing and most reliable at the moment.
Yeah,
I think that's for sure.
And then last question of the day.
Yeah, and then just a nice, simple, quick one from Davey Rattan. Where do you think Carlos Sainz is going to go?
Ooh, quick question, deserves a quick answer. I am going to say, I'd like to see him go to Red Bull. I'd love to see him up against Verstappen. Interesting. Would be brilliant.
That would be good. I mean, they've been teammates before, haven't they? They were teammates back at Toro Rosso, so it's not unfamiliar territory for them both.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What about you? Where do you want him to go?
I've been saying since the announcement, Audi. I think there's an existing relationship with the Sainz family in all the stuff that Carlos Sainz Senior does with the Audi e-tron team for things like the
Dakar,
the Dakar Rally with the electric SUVs and stuff like that. So there's an existing connection there that I think Audi themselves would be silly not to try and tap into, and it's one of the many options I'm sure Carlos will look at of, I've got a chance at a factory seat there and be part of something in a new era. So at the minute, I think he could technically go to any team because they'd all be mad to not want him realistically.
Yeah.
But that's just kind of where, since day one, I've felt it'll go because the pieces just seem to naturally fit into place. But who knows? F1's
who knows? Sport. We'll see. Yeah, I don't know if I'd go to Audi if I was him, just because new team. If you look at Sauber and the state they're in at the moment, they'd probably be pretty far down my list. Mm. If you could get that Red Bull seat, that's the total opposite end of the spectrum.
I just always think about Audi. A little bit like Mercedes, where when Mercedes came back to the sport as a manufacturer, in they do serious due diligence on
they don't mess around.
Any sport. Yeah, yeah. Like, look at the time in WEC, look at the time in Formula E, look at what they do in Dakar with the e-trons. Like, they do not mess around, and they make sure everything is kind of in the right setting and at the right time. They don't rush these things, and this has obviously been a long time coming, and we've still got two seasons, well, this season and next season, until we even see them properly enter the sport.
Yeah.
Even though the name will appear a bit sooner, like, they don't properly enter the sport until these new regs in 2026.
And you know what engine technology they have with their electric motors and electric battery powered things too, because they got the Volkswagen electric Pikes Peak car that just absolutely smashed everything and is an amazing bit of technology. Obviously different beast. That's more of a sprint rally car than it is a Grand Prix car, but still, like, you know, they do show that they've got experience. And with there being more electric power coming to Formula One, as we discussed at the start of the show, they could well become a factor with their engine. So maybe we leave it there. If you liked this, please do remember to hit the subscribe button or follow us on Twitter or Facebook or wherever you do all your following. You can, if you really, really, really like us, you can join our Patreon, and then you become a part of the Discord, where we've got a lovely family of people who are all respectful and nice and talk about Formula One to other people like they're human beings, which is great. So, and a rare thing on the internet. So that's it for this week. Don't forget to enter the Predictions League, and we will see you next time. Goodbye.
Bye, everyone.